from the archives of WQXR New York on the occasion of the station's 75th anniversary. We thought the WQXR story might be of interest. First, from the WQXR New York website, and we quote, "As we mark WQXR's 75th anniversary, we're feeling pretty curious about our history. Commenced the plundering of the archives. We've unearthed a ton of great artifacts to share, some we didn't even know we had, including photos, cartoons, notes, footage, recordings, and more. This particular collection of historical items is not only cool to look at, but they help to more vividly tell the story of a New York institution. Let the storytelling begin. Did you know that WQXR used to have its own in-house string quartet? Pretty fancy stuff. This quartet was a long time coming. WQXR signed a contract with the Musicians Union in the late 1930s, which began our proud tradition of regularly engaging musicians to educate the public on their artistry through live on-air performances. Early on, WQXR's music director was Eddie Brown, a violinist who brought in many performers and first developed the idea of a staff string orchestra. Beginning with a group of 10 players, with Brown as conductor and occasional soloist, the group evolved into the quartet. An in-house string ensemble wasn't Brown's only bright idea. Ingeniously, he arranged an evening of music at the Waldorf Astoria to showcase the high level of musicianship in jazz at the time, an effort to sway his classical cohort's interests in the rapidly developing genre. Inviting guests like conductor Wilfred Pelletier of the Metropolitan Opera to hear Benny Goodman, Brown's mixing of jazz and classical artists produced a vibe of mutual appreciation that spilled over to WQXR programming. At a time when 80% of airtime was devoted to classical music, the station began broadcasting blues, jazz, and swing. Another WQXR host of note from back in the day was Commander Edward Whitehead, who also had his share of advertising chops. He was a decorated British naval officer. Whitehead was the host of WQXR's This Is Britain. The program guide described the show as a program of sounds, music, and stories of England. The host takes his listeners on a personally conducted tour of the British Isles with comments based on his personal experiences. In addition to being a naval commander and radio host, Whitehead was probably best known as the on-air advertising representative for Schweppes. Whitehead's catchphrase at the time was, "WQXR has Schweppervescence." Another well-known WQXR personality was Abram Chasins. He was associated with WQXR from 1941 to 1965. In addition to helping WQXR become one of the country's most celebrated music stations and winning a Peabody Award for excellence in broadcasting, Chasins was also an accomplished pianist, composer, and author. WQXR began its first stereophonic broadcasts in 1952. So, that's kind of public information from the station's WQXR-FM archives. What follows now is the meat. Did you know that WQXR was formerly W2XR? John Vincent Lawless Hogan, a Yale grad and communications engineer, started the station in 1929 as W2XR, an experimental television and facsimile broadcast facility. The 2 in W2XR indicated it was a non-commercial radio station. It had nothing to do with the location, as ham calls do. Hogan was a founder of the Institute of Radio Engineers in 1912. He earned 34 patents, including the invention of a single-dial radio control. The first public information on Hogan's efforts to take to the airwaves show a 1-kilowatt permit for 1550 and authorizing broadcast hours as needed for the conduct of the planned research. It's likely that the planned research was into the use of those top-end channels for the double-wide transmission of so-called high-fidelity AM radio. You'll recall the FCC tried that experiment. They authorized double-wide channels in the hopes that people would transmit out to 20 kilocycles. In 1936, the FCC granted Hogan 5 kilowatts and a licensee change to Interstate Broadcast Company, and W2XR officially became WQXR. In 1940, the FCC approved a request for 10 kilowatts, a move to 1560, and a directional antenna system. The wideband experiment was put to sleep, and the adjacent frequencies in the 1500s were opened up. The station operated non-directional on 1560 for several years under special authorization. While NARBA had verified WQXR's 1560 channel, the special temporary authority was conditioned on Cuba's right to complain about interference if that country also built on 1560. Then in 1946, the commission granted WQXR 50 kilowatts, subject to full-time directional operation. The station, for some reason, kept requesting delays for its 50-kilowatt build-out, finally completing the work in 1956 for the sale to the New York Times. The 1956 transmission system was changed to DA2, different pattern at night, due to the need to protect co-channel Bakersfield, California, and they had to add a third tower. Interestingly, the WQXR authorization allowed the station to stay on daytime until local sunset Bakersfield time, giving the New York station a great advantage in the states east of California. As we said, WQXR AM was the first station in New York to experiment with broadcasting in stereo in 1952. During some of their live concerts, they used two microphones positioned 6 feet apart. The mic on the right led to their AM feed, and the one on the left to their FM transmitter, so a listener could position two radios 6 feet apart and listen in some form of stereo. And how about that FM side? WQXR-FM is the outgrowth of that high-fidelity experiment on 1550. One of the station's listeners was the inventor of frequency modulation, Edward Howard Armstrong. When Armstrong put his experimental FM station, W2XMN, on the air, he arranged to rebroadcast some of WQXR's high-fidelity AM programming. This ended in 1939 when Hogan put his own experimental FM station on the air, W2XQR, just down the dial from Armstrong at 42.3 megahertz. When the Federal Communications Commission began licensing commercial FM stations, W2XQR moved to 45.9 and became W59NY, one of the special five-letter FM call signs. W59NY later became WQXQ. When the FM band was moved from 42 to 50 megs to its present frequency range of 88 to 108, WQXQ moved to 97.7. Within a few years, the station had adopted its current call sign, WQXR-FM, and was assigned to 96.3. During the 1950s, WQXR-FM's programming was also heard on the Rural Radio Network in upstate New York. Both the WQXR AM and FM sides continued to simulcast each other until 1965, when the FCC began requiring commonly owned AM and FM stations in large markets to broadcast separate programming. In 1962, the QXR network was sold, but WQXR remained under New York Times ownership. After briefly attempting to sell the stations in 1971, the New York Times was able to get a waiver of the simulcasting rules. The stations continued to duplicate each other until 1992, when the AM side changed its programming from classical to popular standards, becoming WQEW. In 1998, the Times entered into a long-term lease for WQEW with ABC, a move which brought Radio Disney to New York. The Times also included a purchase clause in the lease contract, and ABC exercised the option to buy 1560 in 2007. This left WQXR-FM as the Times' lone radio station. And then in 2009, Univision Radio bought the 96.3 station and swapped it with its own weaker 105.9 channel. Classical WQXR-FM moved from 96.3 to 105.9, while Univision's Spanish WCAA moved to 96.3 and relaunched as WXNY X 96.3. WQXR is now co-operated with WNYC-AM. And what of WNYC, itself a heritage call in New York? The idea of a city-owned and operated radio station began in 1922 with Grover A. Whalen, New York City's commissioner for plant and structures. Working behind the scenes, Whalen got his radio proposal placed before the City Board of Estimate, and in June of that year, they approved $50,000 for the establishment of a municipal wireless broadcasting station. Getting on the air took 2 more years and a few hurdles to jump in the process. For one thing, transmitters were not readily available. After some searching, Whalen found a second-hand one in Brazil that had been used for that country's centennial celebration. They shipped it north, and in 1924, WNYC began broadcasting at 570. In 1928, WNYC was forced into a time-sharing arrangement on 570 with WMCA, another pioneering New York radio outlet. This situation lasted until the early 1930s, when the FCC moved WNYC to 810 AM, 1 kilowatt directional, daytime only. The frequency move did not help WNYC from an operational standpoint, as it now had to share its frequency with the much more powerful WCCO in Minneapolis. In 1934, New York Mayor Fiorella LaGuardia seriously considered shutting down WNYC, but appointed a citizens' committee to consider all the options. The committee, including CBS Chief William Paley, recommended WNYC stay on the air as a public voice. In 1937, the transmitter was moved from the municipal building to a new facility on the East River in Greenpoint, Brooklyn. In 1941, the North American Radio Broadcasting Agreement shifted WNYC's dial position a second time to 830 kilohertz. Well, WCCO was moved to 830 as well and was given clear channel authority, so WNYC would have to remain a 1,000-watt daytime-only outlet for the next 48 years. There's an entire textbook on the ensuing battle between WNYC and WCCO. WNYC was granted special operating authority to extend daytime non-directional hours to local sunset in Minneapolis and as late as 10 p.m. New York time. WCCO fought back. Then in 1989, WNYC found a way to move from 830 to 820 kilohertz. That gave them around-the-clock operations, increasing daytime power to 10,000 watts with a kilowatt at night. The Brooklyn transmitters ceased operations, and the AM side moved to Belleville Turnpike in Kearny, New Jersey, sharing space on WMCA's three towers. WNYC began regularly scheduled broadcasts on FM in the old band at 43.9. Known originally as W39NY, the FM outlet adopted its present WNYC-FM identity and its present dial position at 93.9. In 1995, Mayor Giuliani split WNYC Radio from its sister television station, and a risk arose that the radio stations might be sold off to corporate interests. In 1997, the station was saved by its sale to the nonprofit WNYC Foundation. This put an end to the occasional political intrusions of the past. The terrorist attacks of 9/11 destroyed WNYC's FM transmitter atop the World Trade Center. The station's studios in the nearby municipal building had to be evacuated, and station staff was unable to return to its offices for 3 weeks. WNYC temporarily moved to the studios of National Public Radio's New York Bureau in Midtown Manhattan, where it broadcast on its AM outlet, 820 kilohertz. And that closes the loop and brings us back to WQXR. In 2009, WNYC took control of classical music station WQXR-FM. WQXR's intellectual property, the call letters and the format, was acquired from the New York Times Company as part of the deal with Univision Radio. The arrangement resulted in WQXR becoming a non-commercial educational station and WNYC-FM dropping its remaining classical music programming to become a full-time news talk station. And New York Public Radio was on the grow. Earlier this year, the New Jersey Public Broadcasting Authority agreed to sell 4 FM stations in northern New Jersey to New York Public Radio. The 4 stations previously belonged to New Jersey Network's statewide radio service. They were rebranded as New Jersey Public Radio. And that's one whale of a New York tale. There'll be more in a future broadcast, but for today, we've run out of time.